Would you introduce yourselves, please?
Hey, I'm Tom.
Hey, I'm Josh. I'm the one with the lovely voice in the band.
And what band are you in, lovely voice?
We're in the Horrors.
The band's been around since 05, first album came out in 07. We know this stuff. So what's some other stuff? Is there any other stuff, like when you read the bio and you're like, either I wish they put that in or I wish they took that out? Or
I guess I've never really felt it captured the weirdness of the way we met and the way we started our band, which was just that if I was to explain, it's almost unexplainable. We all knew each other like through each other without actually knowing all five of us, if you know what I mean. Like one person didn't know all the other four people, but they might have known two people, but from completely unrelated circumstances. But then the one person would know another two people. It was like that. And then we all kind of realized that we knew each other. Like I met Joe walking down South End Seafront, and he was just walking behind me in Paris, and he had a box of records and we had a box of records, and we just started to talk. And by the time we got to where we were going, because he was going there as well, he was the drummer. Like stuff like that, that never actually kind of really got in there, because as soon as you try and explain it and actually get down to it, it's probably unwritable, if you know what I mean. It doesn't make, you know, as good a reading.
What do you think was in the box of records? Anybody know?
What was in the box of records?
I did some at the time, some Liars. I'm trying to think of Joe's box. Bush Tetras, some drum and bass.
There was a 7-inch box, there'd be no drum and bass in there.
It was a 12-inch box, a red tartan 12-inch box.
The Enemy is a, you know, a sunshiny day one moment and a dark horror of victimless stupidity another moment. There are many victims, depending on what moment they're in. So how kind were they to you? Well, pre, obviously, and then post, how good have they been? I mean, it hasn't been that long, but they do have an opportunity to do something to you, even after they give you the awards, don't they?
They've been very favorable to us.
From moment one.
Yeah, they've been very, very good to us. I don't really...
That makes you very lucky, you know.
It does make us very lucky, but at the same time...
It just means impending doom.
Yeah,
it's over the horizon.
Something is on the horizon.
I've never seen the Datsuns. I've never seen that. I've actually seen that. When I was at school, actually seeing a magazine who celebrated one minute and destroyed the next and really slagged them off. And that was just really, I think that was a real shame, because I thought it was a good band and it wasn't necessary. You know, the negative bit isn't actually necessary. You don't need to do that.
When you sit down back then, and you met with record boxes and you're hanging out, and obviously you had certain common taste in music, but you also obviously were a melting pot of music or you wouldn't be what you were. Did you ever, some bands do and some bands don't, did you ever sit down and say, okay, this is who we want to be and this is where we want to go? Or did you do anything that was some commonality before you sat down and recorded the first thing?
There was loose talk. It was actually when Faris and I were at school, we talked about, we wanted to start a band when we left school that just did garage covers. And I think that was the closest thing we ever came to categorizing ourselves. But then, like, as soon as we got into the studio and we started rehearsing, it was just totally different, wasn't it? It was just like not the thing that we originally set out to do at all.
Yeah, I guess if we'd had that conversation, it probably would have never ended. We'd never have actually come to an agreement on anything, because I guess we're all that different. So we couldn't have it.
So Skine comes out. Did the critics finally get off the whole goth thing and just move on to... No, but I would imagine they had an opportunity to get off the goth thing and move on to Madchester.
The Enemy tried to champion us as a new baggy movement, which we got very confused about. And I think everyone who read the articles got very confused about. And they just kind of forgot about it and pretended they didn't say it.
That one kind of like... That car crashed a little bit, didn't it? Yeah, I've never been one, you know, for years.
They were trying to call us New Grave as well.
Yeah, New Grave.
New Grave is, but wait, that I like. I think you could own that. I think New Grave's pretty good. That's funny.
On at the same time.
Yeah, New Rave into New Grave.
They were trying to set up conflicts in between the two. You know, they were trying to build up some kind of opposition between the two houses of Grave and Rave.
All kidding aside, I went and pulled out my original single of Sheena's a Parasite, right? And you put that next to Skying and you think, okay, there's been, I don't want to use any of those stupid words, so I'll pick one. You know, there's been a lot of progression. There's been a lot of stuff, right? Yeah, I mean, change is good, but there's been progression too. There's obviously, you know, you put that out, and that's a minute and 46 seconds, I believe. And
we never ever decided that we were going to change. It just kind of happened. You know, every time we get back in the studio and just start playing, it's like everyone's a couple of years further down the line. And that's a couple of years of touring around the world and going to record shops and finding new music and touring with other bands as well and seeing other bands. And just all the experiences that happen in between you actually writing a couple of records, that all comes out, that manifests itself as a sonic change.
The one decision you did make for Skying was to kind of make your own, right? And not only make your own studio, but really craft a lot of the gear that you were using to make the sounds, right?
Yes, this was a moment of pure idiocy. But a friend of ours was saying they were going to produce their next record, and I said, who's engineering it? And they said, we don't know yet. And I was like, make sure it's not you. Just make sure it's not you.
And you're doing all those things yourself. Like, even people who produce their own records, they more or less have an engineer in there, because it stops you going crazy and staring at a computer screen all day long. I heard a remix that Chris Watson from Cabaret Voltaire, and he now does all the BBC field recording stuff. I heard a remix he did for Doves, which was basically, as far as I could tell, just a couple of parts from the actual song, and then lots of field recordings, lots of birds and the flapping of wings and all these amazing sounds. This is so much more exciting than a lot of the sounds I can get from a synthesizer, so I quite fancy just recording stuff and you know, trying out other sounds that weren't just coming from keyboards. And so the train was one of them, and like the birds in Moving Further Away and things like that.
I think the other thing that probably freaks people out, and I've talked to several bands about this recently, is that, you know, it's technically illegal to love pop music. And what's interesting, well, do the fans go, cool, the Horrors are covering Beyonce? Or do you get the, really?
I think it's got to be up to the fan, really. I imagine it's going to go every way from complete disgust to, oh, that's quite cool. I think Beyonce quite likes it.
How do you decide what's a good song or a bad song these days, and what right do people have to really kind of judge that, right?
We've talked about this quite a lot, and we've always been of the thought that there's good music and there's bad music, and the good music is the music that makes you feel something and, you know, evokes something in you, and it can be anything. We listen to so much music, and I've always found it impossible. When people ask you that question, what kind of music do you listen to? It's just absolutely impossible question.
Pete Fowler was an interesting choice for Changing the Rain. Now, I know he's a friend, but this was really, you know, Sesame Street meets Vincent Collins meets, you know, Star Trek meets...
He'd love that.
I mean, that's what it said to me.
Pete, I met Pete once when I used to live in this building. My friend said, can my friend Pete come down? He's great. And he came down in a top hat and a waistcoat at 4 o'clock in the morning with a bunch of the weirdest looking people I've ever seen in my life. And we started hanging out pretty much every other day from that day on. So I love his stuff. He did, and his video, when I first went to see him about doing that video, the first thing he played me was that Sesame Street video in the pinball machine. And he said was... he loved and
see,
all this amazing stuff.
I saw it and I was like, yeah, okay.
Yeah, and those amazing... who was the person you said? Vincent
Collins.
Yeah, yeah.
I noticed that there's always Joe Meek mentioned. Do you listen to that kind of stuff? Do you say, oh man, how did he make those sounds? We'd like to do our kind of own perversion on those things.
Unbelievably, actually, Reese was just going through his Joe Meek playlist before you came in. And I was digging for gold. It's got an amazing drum break at the start. And I was just wondering if he... really kind of overcompress the entire thing, so when those drum breaks come in,
the meter and Joe Meek stuff was always like straight.
But that first drum break, when that kicks in for the rest of the tracks, there the drums are three times louder than the rest of the track, and then it sucks back down for the actual track itself, which I thought was really cool.
Yeah, it's probably light bulb compressors. Listen, I always find Joe Meek hugely inspiring, because like he'd take the bed springs out of his bed and make a spring reverb unit out of it, or he'd build early compressors just throwing signals through light bulbs. Which is because as the signal goes through hotter, it makes the light bulb get hotter, so the signal has to get pulled down. Like, it's beautiful. Like, it's so it's so inspiring to think someone just sat there and was like, I want this, but I'll do it in my own way.
Which became a thing that everybody imitated again and again and again, because there was no Joe Meek, but there was Pet Sounds here. So.
Yeah, I guess the two exist in quite similar worlds. Joe Meek's a bit more rough and ready. I always thought. Every time we drive past his flat and his home studio on Holloway Road in London, because we go past it every time we come back from the airport, you give a little salute or a little wave just as you go past.
We do a thing called a musical sandwich, and it's two of your songs is the bread, and then songs by anybody else you want to put in between.